Evening lovelies, welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. Tonight's episode is a little scandalous because I have a threesome for you. The good news is, it's also about the environment. The three people I have tonight are Doug Hesk, Philippe Cousteau, and Georgie Bedil. The three of them have joined forces for a project about sustainable investing, something I had no idea existed, but then again, that's why I'm here to ask the questions so you don't have to. They each have their individual causes, but a commonality amongst the three of them is the focus on the environment and making smart choices and educating our children, because honestly, Whitney was right. Children are the future. Children are the ones that are going to save our butts, so to speak. Tonight's eco tip is from the Eco Hero Handbook by Tessa Wardley. The question is, are there sunscreens that don't harm aquatic life? Solution: overexposure to the sun can cause skin cancer, but protecting yourself from harmful rays does not need to be at the expense of the environment. Sunscreens contain damaging chemicals, are being banned in the top tourist destinations of Hawaii, Key West, and they prohibit products containing oxybenzone, and such bans are likely to spread. You can't scrimp on protection from the sun, but you can reduce the amount of sunscreen you use and still get the vital skin protection you need if you wear a rash vest or a long-sleeve swimming costume when you swim. Goodness, that was a long one. So now, grab your cup of coffee and your favorite beverage, cuddle up with your host pup, and get ready for the threesome.
So I'm one of the founders of New Day Impact Investing.
Philippe is here.
Philippe is joining. Hey, Philippe.
Doug, how you doing, man?
Great. How are you?
Hello.
Good. Thank you. Hello, Pub. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Terrific.
He just started talking about New Day and ESG, and we want to talk about how that started and how everybody kind of got together, because you all have individual projects and organizations and passions, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although there's a lot of commonality between the work that all of us are doing. And Philippe, Georgie will be joining us in about 10 minutes or so.
All right. Cool.
So Doug, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So I'm one of the founders of New Day Impact. So we're an institutional asset management and impact education organization based out of San Francisco, California.
Forgive me for seeming dumb about this, but how does investing and environmental consciousness, how does that merge together?
Well, ESG is a practice which really focuses on companies that demonstrate favorable environmental, social, and governance characteristics. And we fundamentally have a belief, and there's a lot of evidence that supports this, that organizations that are making those types of decisions, not just writing policy around all of this, but actually putting into practice these really important and measurable behaviors, outperform those organizations that are not doing that. And that's one of the reasons that led us to the formation of this business.
Why is ESG investing growing so rapidly, especially among millennials and Gen Z investors?
Yeah, that's a combination of things. So we have this massive generation of younger people today that care about these issues more than anybody else. 150 million people just here in the US, as a combination of both Gen Z and millennials. And this is this generation, as you may understand, is expected to inherit somewhere between $30 and $45 trillion of wealth over the course of the next decade or two. 66% of these individuals say that they're willing to pay more for a product or service that's committed to positive social and environmental impact. 69% believe that investments are a way to express social, political, and environmental value. And 90% of millennials and Gen Zs today say that they are interested in socially responsible investing as a means of expressing their value. So that's all really, really important. This is a generation that already possesses 40% of the purchasing power of the entire country here. Adding to that is the fact that companies that adopt real and measurable policies and practices around ESG, as we were just discussing, demonstrate better operational performance, have a lower cost of capital, and improve stock performance, as measured by almost every study that we've looked at over the last decade or so.
Wow. And do you think that this desire to support companies that are more concerned about the environment or socially conscious is due to them having a real knowledge of what their future will be environmentally, knowing where we are as a planet and knowing that they are inheriting these troubles. Because a lot of environmental people I've spoken to have talked about the next 40 or 50 years. It's emphasized over and over again that this is going to be our children's problem or our grandchildren's problem. Do you think that these generations are just cognizant of that, and that is why they tend to be more passionate about these type of companies and supporting the companies that make these good changes?
I think that they're even more than cognizant of that. And they, similar to us, I don't think it matters which generation you're coming from. There are a lot of people that don't like the narrative that we're living in today. And many of those individuals are determined to do something about that. So we have these three core principles or pillars of the work that we do at our organization, which are all built around these ideas of getting informed, getting involved, and then getting invested, you know, which are all really measures of engagement. It's putting your capital where your mouth is, but it's also making sure that you as an individual, as a responsible citizen, are doing everything that you can to support the issue. Mm-hmm. And putting action behind all of these things.
I like that. Putting your money, put your money where your mouth is. Where your beliefs are, yeah. Philippe, tell me a little bit about Earth Echo International.
So Earth Echo International is a nonprofit organization that I founded 15 years ago. We're a leading global youth environmental education organization rooted in the belief that that young people have the power to change the world and are indeed the only ones who ever really have. And we are very much inspired by the legacy of my grandfather, Jacques Cousteau, and my father, Philippe Sr. Mm-hmm. And their belief that before we can talk about conservation, we have to talk about education.
Absolutely.
And we have activated 2 million people in 146 countries around the world over the last 15 years and are really dedicated to building a youth movement that understands that we have a lot of work to do, that we are in a very serious predicament with respect to the environment and thus ourselves, and that it's going to take a global youth movement to really turn that around and build a hopeful, thriving future. So we are focused predominantly on ocean conservation issues. But that, of course, you know, the ocean is a place that affects all of us, whether we live on the coast or not. Mm-hmm. It regulates our climate. It provides more than half the oxygen on our planet. It provides food to hundreds of millions of people. And of course, it is a multi-trillion dollar value to the global economy every year. Not to mention its spiritual value, recreational value, et cetera. And so we recognize, though, that the ocean is an issue that while it affects everybody, not everyone connects those dots. So we do a lot of work inland and through water issues and, you know, areas all over the world. Again, not just coastal communities, and helping them understand their connection to water and to the ocean and to all the things the ocean affects, like our food and our climate and all the other things we like to take for granted. So,
right. Absolutely. In regards to the climate, there is something in the ocean that is dying off that helps to reduce the CO2, and it's been dying off for a while.
Well, there's a considerable amount of functions that the ocean does that are dying off that reduces CO2 as carbon sinks. So, for example, coastal habitats like mangroves, and seagrass beds. For a long time, mangroves were disappearing faster than rainforest. That started to slow down in the last few years as some many nations start to recognize their value. But a square acre of mangrove absorbs more carbon than a square acre of rainforest. We are seeing similar with seagrass beds and kelp forests. Those are all carbon sinks. In addition, large animals, whales, sharks, long-lived creatures also absorb carbon and store that carbon in the ocean. So as we have seen overfishing and the depletion of fish stocks, whaling, et cetera, that has also reduced the ocean's capacity as a carbon sink. The ocean has absorbed about 90% of the excess heat that has been created by the greenhouse gas effect over the last century and a half or so, since we really began in earnest burning fossil fuels. And so while that has provided an essential service in that it's helped mitigate the impacts of climate change on this planet, what it has caused is the ocean to warm. And in doing so, what happens when things warm, they expand. Ocean sea level rises. We're seeing the consequences of that in massive storms like Hurricane Sandy and the flooding in New York caused by extreme storms and sea level rise. It's also impeding the ocean's function as a climate regulator. And so essentially what the ocean does in regulating our climate, and remember the difference between climate and weather. Climate is The average of weather over a long period of time, typically 30 years. And of course, weather is what you open your window and you see out the window. But the ocean regulates our climate because it water absorbs heat. And of course, it moves cold water from the poles, which are like the air conditioning units of the Earth, the Arctic and the Antarctic, up towards the middle of the ocean, and then takes warm water and thus heat from the tropics and spreads that out towards the poles. And without that function of the ocean, the Earth would be much more extreme. We'd have much colder poles and much, much hotter central latitudes. And that's essentially what's happening, as we're seeing, is the ocean's functionality and ability to transport heat and its traditional role on this planet is compromised by the fact that it's just generally getting warmer and the poles are melting, the ice caps are melting, and we're seeing some very big issues there. So yes, there are a multitude of habitats in the ocean that have been impacted negatively that mitigate climate change. But on the flip side, what that means is that when we take action to help restore the oceans and help build health in the ocean and ocean ecosystems, the ocean can be a powerful ally. And in fact, a critical ally in combating climate change.
It's like the ocean is our quarterback and he's injured.
That's a great way to put it. You know, it absolutely, for so many things on this planet that we rely on to survive, without the ocean, life is impossible on this Earth. And one of the challenges we encounter and why our focus on movement building and engaging young people is helping people understand that the ocean is central to our survival on this planet. It's too often an afterthought when it needs to be central to the discussion. And the ocean is in trouble, and thus we're in trouble. And as Sylvia Earle likes to say, we have to protect the ocean like our life depends on it, because it does.
There's certainly been a lot of discussion about COVID-19 over the last year, and I'm sure, Philippe, you have probably heard something similar to this, the oceans being referred to as a ventilator for our planet, which is an operative word over the last year.
Very relevant. Yes, absolutely. An HVAC system, you might say, a ventilator. And without it working properly, we are all in deep trouble.
Don't worry if you were going to say another word. It's fine. Well, it's just, it's odd that casual conversation about the environment, people talk about trees, people talk about fracking. It's like, hello, there's this massive ocean that covers, I forget what percentage of the Earth. And like you said, the fact that whales and sharks and these marine animals that live, what, decades, right? Decades and decades. But we're overfishing and taking their food and they're dying off. So it's like we as humans need to understand that even these small things such as overfishing are affecting us. Even as we're trying.
Absolutely. There's two examples to underscore that point. One, 90%. Now, this is really, I think one of the challenges we face is that some of these numbers are so big, mm-hmm. they're really hard to get your head around. So just to finish that quick thought and then to move on, but 90% of the world's large scale animals, whales, sharks, et cetera, have disappeared by volume in the last half century. And that is, imagine there are, for example, less than 200 right whales left in the North Atlantic, when prior to whaling, hundreds of thousands of them roamed the ocean. In the last 40 years, we've lost half the world's biodiversity. Mm-hmm. And I look at my little 2-year-old and I'm 41. And I think to myself, you know, in my lifetime, what kind of a world have I passed on to her? And I'm ashamed, frankly. And I think about the fact that also so many of these issues that we don't connect the dots on with respect to the ocean and our security and human rights. One example of that is the piracy crisis in the Red Sea. That has dominated headlines. There's been major motion pictures made with people like Tom Hanks. And yet that terrible crisis, which has funded terrorist organizations around the world, which is caused the directly caused the death and suffering of thousands and the displacement of hundreds of thousands of people, has its roots in fisheries management, or the lack thereof. That in the 1990s, along that coastline of Somalia, when the government was unable to enforce its territorial waters, illegal fishing from the EU and the Europe, from Russia, from China, was started coming into those territorial waters, pulling out $300 million worth of illegal fish every year. Traditional small-scale fishermen who had subsisted on these fisheries for millennia all of a sudden couldn't feed their families, and so started to arm themselves in order to fight against these illegal fishing boats.
Wow.
and started to hijack some of them and got ransom for them. And unable to feed their families because of overfishing, a new industry was born. And I've actually seen reports by the Department of Defense here in the United States, and the summary of the report on the Somali piracy crisis states, with a few million dollars of fisheries management, all of that could have been avoided. Imagine a few million dollars of fisheries investment, management, and sustainability to keep allowing those people to feed themselves from an artisanal perspective and eliminate the large-scale industrial fishing that's destroying our oceans. Would have saved hundreds of billions of dollars, thousands of lives. It's staggering. So just two examples of how the ocean, you know, is changing and is affecting each and every one of us, whether we care about coral reefs or fish or anything. It is affecting our lives no matter where we are, and the lives and rights of so many people around the world. So anyway, I'll stop there.
That's just, it's mind blowing. And you're right. Those are big numbers. They're scary numbers, but I feel like we need to be scared. So we need a wake up call.
Well, I think we need to be optimistic as well, too. And this is what brings about the work of Earth Eco International and the work of the Georgie Bedell Foundation. There are organizations and individuals that are doing their best to address this. And part of this comes through education, the admirable work that Philippe is doing, having served now more than 2 million younger people around these important educational issues, the work that Georgie is doing in her home country of Burkina Faso, and, you know, the responsibility that she feels personally about bringing jobs to her home country and then educational training for women that are becoming engineers and supporting, you know, well repair and a lot of other things too. So, you know, there's some intersection between the work that all of us are doing with reference to right here in the United States and the work that we're doing with the SIFMA Foundation's National Stock Market Game. And both Philippe and Georgie have spent time over the course of the last 30 days educating a lot of younger people that are part of the K-12 educational system on the importance of all of this. So these are the future leaders of tomorrow, and who want them to, you know, adopt different behavior when it comes to not just the investment and financial decisions that they're making, but how they're conducting themselves as citizens and how they're purchasing goods and making those decisions as well.
I think the overall lesson we're learning is that the young people, they're the change makers, it seems, the decision makers. They're who we need to be talking to. We all need to be educated. Let's not be crazy. We all need a few lessons and sustainability and being better. But the kids and the grandkids, that's where it's at. And they're not only the future change makers, they're the future voters. They're the people that are, you know, going to be at the polls.
Yeah, you know, it's core to our values at Earth Eco, and our belief over the last 15 years is this idea that the young people are the ones that truly drive social trends and social change. Mm-hmm. And it's not about recycling plastic bags. Mm-mm. Or stop using, you know, straws. Those are valuable things for us to all be doing. It is much bigger than that, though. And those are an example of the types of behavior, certainly, that we should be making, easy behaviors in our lives. But it's about how we invest our money. It's about what we buy. It's about who we vote for. It's about those kinds of bigger fundamental changes that we are looking at, about the choices that we make in our daily lives. We have a saying at Earth Eco, everything we do makes a difference. All your choices have consequences. And the question we need to ask ourselves is, what kind of a difference do we want to make with our choices? And for us, it's such a no-brainer looking at you know, our partnership with New Day, because where we invest our money and that $30 to $45 trillion that is going to be shifting generationally over the next decade or so is an extraordinary opportunity to drive resources into the types of businesses and companies that can renew and enhance the health of our planet and people. And that's really where the opportunity is, in terms of, we also are engaged at Earth Eco in helping young people get engaged in politics, getting engaged in social entrepreneurship, getting engaged in volunteerism, whatever it may be, community action. But how we spend our money, where we invest our money, is a big part of that equation. Why we're involved. And it's a hopeful part of the equation, because it gives us an opportunity. I've never been a big fan of the divestment movement, because it's typical nonprofit fare, which is, don't do this, don't do that. I'm much more of a fan of the reinvestment movement, which is thinking about, where's the opportunity where we can invest our dollars in new and different ways that provide opportunity to give hope for the future. And that's really what we get excited about. Things like New Day is this is a reinvestment opportunity, an investment opportunity for those new investors out there to think about, wow, I can change the world with the dollars I'm investing, as well as the choices I make politically, as well as the things I buy in the supermarket. Mm-hmm. But that's extraordinary.
Yeah, Philippe, I'm so pleased that you shared that we all have great jobs. And this has been a lot of fun because we get to engage with this generation of younger people that are not in despair, but they want to do something about it. And they are doing something. This is core to the foundation of the work that we do. And this question around what is the impact that we could have if we were unable to unleash this younger generation's vigor for deep and lasting change by providing them this mechanism whereby they can collectively work together to solve these issues. And that's what's really exciting about this.
Well, the great thing too about the New Day is that it's really accessible to anybody, but the limitations to how much you can invest or the bar is low, which is great because it gives retail investors an opportunity to be a part of this. It's not just for big banks and things like that. And it's an example that we can all really be a part of this. And yeah, Doug, you're absolutely right. I will say what keeps me going and gives me such optimism in the world is working with young people and seeing the determination, seeing the optimism that they are focused on solutions and on building a better world, and that it's possible and we have the tools to do it. We just need the will at scale. Mm-hmm. And that's really what we're focused on, building that literacy and giving those opportunities. But I've spoken enough.
That is impossible to detach ourselves for our everyday lives because we live by roles, right, in life. So how can you say that I want to see this change happen and then you doing completely the opposite? You know, you're spending your funds elsewhere that is completely opposite of what you really want to see happen, you know? So yes, good job. It's nice to hear you talk passionately, Philippe, about the issue.
How did you join up with these guys? He said that you're educating the young people in your home country.
Mm-hmm.
The future engineers, did I hear that?
Yes, absolutely. Now, Doug always described our mission very perfectly. Well, the way that I met Doug through my coach, her name is Suzanne, and now we all Doug joined GBF board and Suzanne as well. So as Philippe was saying, we're changing a new generation. We're changing, we're bringing change to the next generation. I myself used to walk 3 hours to fetch water with my grandmother. And fetching water wasn't something that I really like. And it's until I went to Paris, I started my modeling career, and I went back home to visit my sister who was almost 9 months pregnant. That's when I realized that she had to wake up between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. to get water. And my first thought was like, I used to do it, she did it. That means that my nephew, my nieces, and my children are going to follow. So someone needs to come in and break the cycle, right? So I founded the Georgie Baddiel Foundation in 2015. And in less than 5 years, we provided clean water to over 300,000 people. Most importantly, you know, it's very easy to build wealth, right? You come into the community, they need access to clean water, you build the well and you leave, right? But after 3 to 6 months or a year, that well will break because about 5,000 or less people have access to that well. So we decided to give training to women so that they can learn and restore and maintain these wells, because there is, in Burkina Faso, there is over 9,000 broken wells, and water is a woman issue in my country. So we figured that if water is a woman issue in Burkina Faso, so we should teach women, we should train women on how to fix and maintain them. So we teach them basic engineering, and so far we have trained more than 118 women, and we'll continue our mission. And I love what Doug is doing, you know, by making people aware of knowing where to invest your funds. You know, if you invested to change life, you are going to make a difference for the next generation. But if you just throw it to throw it all to have a bunch of money, well, there will be a generation that is going to suffer. That might not be us. We already started, right, with the struggle, but the next one are going to struggle even more.
Right. So a common theme is amongst all three of you is you have your eyes on the future, doing things in the present that are helping us in the present. But you're also, you have that long view of what's going to come after it. And I think that's wonderful. And I think you guys are like the perfect marriage right here. You're all, as Doug said, you have that commonality. Your hearts seem to be in the same place.
I would also reinforce that. And I think there's something more to it. And it's what I think has brought all of us together here is that all three of us have an understanding that these aren't issues that we're going to solve on our own. Even amongst the three organizations, there's so much work that needs to be done. And the only way that we're going to complete it is by working with one another. There are hundreds of nonprofits and NGOs out there. And if we can get more of these organizations collaborating with government, with citizens, with corporate organizations, with faith-based institutions mm-hmm. to solve these things, the faster we're going to get it done.
Absolutely. It's a team effort, honestly.
Absolutely. And I wanted to mention too that GBF, the Georgie Baddiel Foundation, we right now working with the government of Burkina Faso so that we can create a real change, you know, bring a real change to the life of this one that need clean drinking water. We just here, we're just talking about water. Mm-hmm. We're not even talking about jobs or anything else. We're talking about water, which is so basic, you know, to our survival. Definitely collaborating with governments are everything, mm-hmm. you know, but when it comes to doing the work, a small organization like GBF does the work. We mm-hmm. build the well, we bring the water to the people. We give them the training, right? We do the actual work.
What Georgie and GBF are doing though is what the true definition of sustainability is, right? Funding new wells and then walking away from them, but really teaching the individuals who have had the power all along to ensure that they have a sustainable future, right? Mm-hmm. I do want to make sure that Georgie doesn't leave something out here, and that is the fact that she is also an author and does a lot of work with children associated with a series of children's books that she has written.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so I've shared, thank you, Doug, for mentioning that. I have shared my childhood story, which was written by my friend Susan Beatty and illustrated by Peter Reno. And it's called The Water Princess. Oh. And so far, The Water Princess has been translated in 8 different languages. And in English, we are about on every library and schools across America, which is, you know, an honor to be able to share my story as a kid to make a difference, you know. Mm-hmm. The main goal here is to change another generation. It's not like to share the sad story. I used to walk to fetch water. Oh my God, this is so bad. No, it's to raise awareness on the water issue. It's to make people understand that we are fortunate to have access to clean drinking water. But unfortunately, there is another person on the other side of the world that just don't have that glass of water, that just is deprived to go to school because they don't have access to clean drinking water. There is a woman that is giving birth that don't have access to water. There is a lot of happening, a lot of negativity happening across the world with some people with not access to clean drinking water. So sharing the Water Princess with the world was the main point, was to raise awareness on the water issue and make a difference, change a generation. That is my dream, is to change the next generation of Burkinabean Africans.
Yeah. And education is such a key to that.
Absolutely. How can you educate a child without access to clean drinking water? I'm telling you, it's impossible.
I feel like if you came in and you sank the wells, you built the wells and then just left, well, then the well breaks and they're not only back to where they were. I think it's almost worse because they had that access. They had enjoyed, for lack of a better word, the clean drinking water and the fresh water to bathe in and clean in. You educated these women, you taught them the skills they need to sustain their wells and to keep their wells going. And they're going to, in turn, train somebody else, right? And then they're going to educate. And a little girl are going to see their mom doing this and be so proud and be inspired to also learn. So you're affecting the future generation. And that's just wonderful.
Thank you.
So Doug, you got on the board of GBF and met Georgie. And you met Philippe. And you guys all came together with your individual passions that merged so nicely. And you did New Day.
The organization name is New Day Impact.
The New Day Impact, where people are putting their money where their mouth is. They're making those good investing choices for the companies that they believe in, or that the companies are actually doing the positive changes, you know, putting a good spin on their future by their investing.
Yes, and it's even more than that too. So as a registered B Corporation, and because we fundamentally care about this work that's going on, that both Earth Echo International and the Georgie Bedell Foundation are doing, we make a contribution of a percentage of our revenues each year so that they can continue to do the work that they and only they can do. And these relationships are about working with organizations that are doing the real grassroots work. They're not organizations that are overly burdened by operating expenses, but they're making meaningful difference in the communities of individuals that they're serving.
That's fantastic. And you're
this
right.
This is why it's important to invest on the right place.
And you guys are spotlighting that. You're bringing attention to it. Again, education. It's such the key element in making positive changes, because if you don't know, you don't know, and you just sit there on your hands and you're not really doing anything.
Well, and that's the thing that I think is really extraordinary. And by the way, I just ordered my copy of The Water Princess. I have a little girl. So
that is so sweet. Right, thank you, Philippe. Thank you. I would have mailed you one, please.
Oh, I'm very excited about it.
Thank you.
So we're always looking for good books, inspirational books for our little girl, you know, but the idea here for me is I think what's hopeful, again, getting back to that concept, is we find that young people are hungry for this, and they know, I mean, this is the upside of the connected world that we live in. There's a lot of downside to social media and all these other things. We've seen it. We've seen the impacts and the consequences of that recently in particular. But the upside is that young people are more aware and switched on of the issues that are facing us than ever before. What comes with that is a real deep desire to do something about it. And so now there, you know, this is an example of one of those kinds of what I like to think of as pillars in our lives, choices that we can make, sectors of choice around where we invest our money, where we spend our money, that give us an opportunity to make those choices, as Georgie said, consistent with our values. And that's exciting to me, because again, it just increases the arsenal of tools that we have to solve these problems, as opposed to, you know, being despondent about the challenges that we face, which are overwhelming at times. There's no question about that, but which also have solutions. And it just so happens that this solution in particular, and I've been involved in ESG investing one way or another for the past 12 or so years, but as Doug pointed out, it also makes money. You know, you make money and change the world. And, you know, and New Day has been around, well, how long now, Doug?
Almost 5 years.
Wow. And it's pretty extraordinary the success that they've seen. And also, you know, a lot of companies may wait a really, really long time before they decide to give some money back or do a partnership with a nonprofit. But out of the gate, you know, Doug and the team at New Day really were putting their money where their mouth is and really looking at not just supporting organizations, but the core central point to the whole, or you know, company is ESG, is really like investing in ways that can make a positive difference. So it's that whole holistic approach. Right, the old model of making billions and billions of dollars, destroying the planet, and then kind of feeling guilty about it and donating a couple percentage points to like try and fix it is over. Now it's about making money and doing good while you're making that money, and reinvesting that in education and opportunities and conservation and helping people have access to things like clean water. That's got to be the new model, that more approaching that circular economic model where everything is holistic, everything is positive, how we're making the money, how we're spending the money, how we're investing our money, etc. Not the old model of destroy. Oops, I feel bad. I'm going to give a little bit of money away to try and, you know, assuage my guilt.
Right. Or climbing to the top and not caring who you step on. But in this case, where you're stepping on the planet.
Yeah, the planet and our children, our children's future.
Absolutely.
Here's what we get really excited about, and this ties back into the conversation that we had earlier. The world's population right now is really young. 42% are under 25 years old, right? Mm-hmm. So it's estimated by 2022 that the millennial generation is going to represent a third of all adults just here in the US, right? And 40% of all consumers. There's real power in that. And corporate executives now and their boards are starting to pay attention to that, right? As they should. We spend a lot of time trying to understand how companies use water in their businesses, whether it be, you know, as responsible stewards of water or whether they be, you know, net extractors of water, right? And also the innovative companies that are bringing about new technologies for conservation. So all of this work is incredibly important. And the best news is that we've got this younger generation that is fueling this growth. And we just saw this last week, one of the major bulge bracket asset management firms in the country raised $1.2 billion into a new ESG fund upon launch. That's really, really exciting. We smashed all records last year, $54 billion coming into ESG type of products and funds and things like that. And I think that 2022 is going to look even stronger than that as well.
Oh my God, you said 42% of adults, 42% of the population is under 25.
Yeah.
That's almost half of us. They're gaining on us. And I hate the term woke, but the younger generation is more awake. They are more aware. They've got their finger on the pulse of things that we do not. We have a lot of things that take our attention away from things that doesn't take their attention away. So they are more aware of it. They're more focused on it. They know stuff that's going on. My source of information is often my son that you heard at the beginning.
Right.
So we need to cast our eyes to them and say, hey, what have you heard lately?
Yeah. And I mean, this negative narrative that we were referring to earlier is front and center. It's front and center for all of us, but there isn't a day that we wake up today without seeing this in the headlines, whether it be, you know, on social media or in print publications or on television. It's a major, major concern. But we get our inspiration from this younger group. And I'll share a story with you. This pertains to both Philippe and Georgie. Over the course of the last month, we've done two sessions with the SIFMA Foundation's new Sustainability Impact Influencer series. And both Georgie and Philippe were interviewed by these incredibly powerful younger people that, oh my God, if I was as bright as they were when I was graduating high school, it's I was really, really impressed. You know, it gives me great faith that our future as a country and as a world are in the hands of these younger people that are really going to do something about this. I think this is going to be, you know, the strongest generation as it pertains to taking care of both environmental and social issues that we had than we've never seen before.
They are the future, absolutely.
Change is definitely coming.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. And they're going to bring it. They're going to ride their chariot in with the change. And it's going to be phenomenal. If you guys have children, I know Philippe said he has a 2-year-old and he thinks about it. And I think Doug has older children, but you look at them and as a parent, you're so many different parts. You're terrified for them. You're hopeful for them. You're worried for them. You're optimistic for them. But at the end of the day, they're going to become their own young adults and they're going to be the ones that have to live their lives and make their choices. You guys have these companies that help them make their smart decisions and to know where to put their money and to put their investing. And Doug said, or maybe Philippe said, I apologize, that you're actually making your money because nobody wants to invest in something just because it's a good idea. Let's be honest. Okay. We would love to say, oh, absolutely. I would just give you all of my money because this is such an amazing cause. I firmly believe in it. But underneath it all, when we're investing, I believe that we want something back from it. More than just change or more than just helping a cause. And it seems like that, I mean, I could be way off base, but it seems like that is what you're providing with this company and with this cooperation that you have going on.
Yeah, I think that what everybody has come to recognize, and Philippe had pointed out this earlier, that you don't have to sacrifice return to accomplish good. We do a lot of investment work for some of the largest institutions and families in the country today. And nobody wants to sacrifice return, and you don't have to. And study after study, as we had said earlier, over the course of the last decade, evidence is that organizations and even funds that are focused on socially responsible ESG investing outperform those that do not. And it's driving this massive acceleration in the space. We view it a little bit differently because we don't view it as a product. We view it as something that every investment manager in the world should be integrating into their practices. And that's what changes corporate behavior. If you have, you know, this massive generation or generations of responsibly minded individuals and institutions that want to do something different.
Do you find that there's a difficulty, or do you think that there's a difficulty or a stubbornness in companies that don't want to make those type of changes, that don't want to embrace this type of investing? Is it a case of the old guard or being stuck in your belief systems or how it's always been done kind of thing?
I think that that's part of it. Yeah. And I think that it's all about education. And the fact of the matter is that even as a financial services industry, there have been too few organizations that have counseled first and foremost their advisors, their wealth managers, on the values of or on the merits of values-based investing. And in addition to that, if you have a group of advisors that are counseling clients, their clients aren't understanding that, right? But that's beginning to change. It also needs to change, you know, with, you know, some of the more traditional gatekeepers to large endowments and foundations. I think the more visibility that we can create around this space, the more progress that we're going to make on that front as well.
So perhaps some fresh blood, a fresh outlook, and lots of education.
Yeah, and I think it's almost impossible to argue with right now, right? That our objective as an institutional asset management organization and as a fiduciary is to identify great businesses to invest in, right? So what do great businesses do? They generate an extraordinary amount of wealth for their shareholders, but they also leave a lasting imprint on the communities in which they're living and operating in. They take care of more than the shareholders, but all of the stakeholders, whether it's employees, suppliers, customers, you name it.
That's wonderful. And I'm so glad we're running out of time, but I enjoyed speaking with you guys so much and I learned so much. I'm going to go bang on my son's door and be like, come here, listen to this. You guys missed it earlier. He let out an exultant shout because he had defeated something in his video game. That's what you have to look forward to, Philippe.
I mean, who knows? By then, video games plugged in directly into your brain. I mean, I can't even imagine what the world's going to be like.
You could have an Iron Man situation.
Yes, be interesting.
And I would encourage for all of your listeners, if you'd like to learn more about the work that any one of these organizations is doing, you can find it at EarthEchoInternational.org, the Georgie Baddiel Foundation.org, NewDayImpact.com.
See, Doug just saved me because I was going to have you guys do shout out. I love it. And all of this information will be on the website as well. It was a pleasure, you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Georgie. Thank you for
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.